UWA-517, do you want to report a UFO?
Negative. We don't want to report.
Ares 31, do you wish to report a UFO? Over.
Negative. We want to report one of those either.
Ares 31, do you wish to file a report of any kind of it?
I wouldn't know what kind of report to file, sir.
Ares 31, me neither.
There 71 Papa Golf, go ahead.
And was there anybody above us that passed us like 30 seconds ago?
There 71 Papa Golf, negative.
Okay. Stop this. It's a UFO.
Yeah. Hey, it's Merger 1095. Yeah, something just passed over. Don't know what it was, but it's at least 2,000-3,000 feet above us. Yeah, it passed right over the top of us.
911.
You guys busy? Did we just call about the UFOs we saw?
Mm-hmm.
They're out there. Same airplanes.
And it is such. Bob, I swear to God, four calls in on an unidentified object over Liberty.
Four calls
on an unidentified flying object.
Why not take a look? All right, we'll check it out.
Welcome to UFO Chronicles, a place where people share their experiences of the strange and unexplained. If you've had an encounter and would like to be on the show, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com.
Hello and welcome to the show, everyone, wherever in the world you are listening from tonight. This episode we are joined by Angelique, and she will be sharing an encounter she had with what she calls a demon dog, and other strange occurrences around her property that she believes is all connected with her own investigation into the death of her auntie. Angelique up next.
But first, if you enjoy the show and you would like to help support the podcast on Patreon, you can do this for as little as $1 a month. Head on over to www.patreon.com/UFO Chronicles podcast. You can also find a link in the description of this episode below. Any help is very much appreciated. Now, on with the show. Welcome to the show, Angelique.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
Great to have you on today. Now, you come to us from Kentucky today?
I am. I'm in London, Kentucky. It's very hot here right now. Yeah.
nice weather. And you're here today to share two very different encounters.
They're different encounters. However, I feel that they were somewhat connected in the same sense. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Would you like to start at the beginning for our listeners, please?
Sure. I guess it began with my aunt, the passing of my aunt. She died of, when she passed away, I felt that her husband had done something. It was a very, unexplained death. There was, no autopsy allowed. Her husband, in the state of Indiana, autopsies are not mandated, and the husband or the wife gets to decide whether or not, their spouse gets an autopsy when there's death. And I had known that he was very abusive to her throughout her life, and she and I were very close, and I knew that he had done something, and I wanted an autopsy. Well, this is when my family just changed on me, and they let me know that she died of a heart attack, and I was to shut up and leave it at that. And I started finding out that my grandfather was affiliated with these Freemasons, and then my uncle was a Freemason, her husband was a Freemason, and they were all just together. And I couldn't get any help. I couldn't get them to care about my aunt. And my uncle got a $3 million life insurance policy, and this went into the Freemason pot of their lodge. And that was it done. They wanted it just done. Well, I wasn't satisfied with that because I knew that he'd done something. I felt he murdered my aunt. And my mother felt the same. And she had bruises during the funeral. I mean, you could clearly see her, the bruises around her neck and her face. And so I campaigned to find out what happened. And I got the 911 recording. I contacted the coroner. There's no forensic pathologist there. It's a small town. There's the coroner and then there's the sheriff's department. And I kept investigating this, and I even was able to find a retired FBI agent who believed in my aunt's, that my aunt's death was definitely something that needed to be investigated, and that the town and the people around, surrounding, especially my family, were being very shady about it. And we ended up discovering a lot of strange things with around these Freemasons. There was rumors of child pornography affiliated with going downloaded on the state computers within that town at the sheriff's department. The coroner was said that he would position the dead in sexual positions and take pictures and pass these pictures around the sheriff's department as if they were baseball cards, we were told. So I got a lot of people that became very interested, not just in only my aunt's death, but in this town and the corruption and really what was going on. And my grandfather one day had grabbed me by my shoulders and slammed me up against the wall. And he said, "She died of a heart attack and you need to shut your mouth." You know, and this was the love of my grandpa. I was his favorite. We were so, so close. And I just, this whole world opened up of these Freemasons and then the women, my aunt, the Eastern Star, and nobody cared about my aunt. And so when I got back to California, I just kept continuing investigating. I kept digging for something and trying to get, I wanted her body exhumed. And this is when I had this experience. So do you want me to tell you how it happened that night? What happened exactly?
Yes, please. Yeah, go ahead.
So when my aunt died, she had given me a very long fake fur coat. And she said she didn't need it anymore, I could have it. So that was the only thing that she left me, and that was the coat. And so that night, it was a chilly night, and I put on this coat, and I was still grieving, but I was determined that, you know, I had been communicating with this retired FBI agent. But that night, I was going to take my dog for a walk, and he was a little Shih Tzu. And 2 days before this walk, he was acting very strange, and he bit me while I was trying to grab him to get underneath the table. He bit me, and so he was in trouble that night, and I had him on a leash. Usually not, but that night, I had him on a leash, and I was angry, very upset at him for biting me. And so we started walking, and I remember walking on the sidewalk, and I see something catches my eye to the left, and I look over and I see down in the drain, the water drain, I see two red glowing eyes, and they're the shape of like, they're like the oval shape but kind of slanted, like I guess what you would see like in what they call the grays or something, is the eye that shape, but they were glowing and they were red, and this slowly rise was rising up, and I saw this head, a round head. There was like bat looking ears, and before I could even figure out what I was looking at, this thing jumped up out of the drain and had like webbing. The web was attached from his forearm to the thigh, and it was expanded, and I could see the veins within the webbing under the arms, and it pounced right in front of me. I would say about 3.5 feet tall, very wide, like a pit bull head and a more like a bulldog body. The face was smashed in. Like I said, the ears were like somewhat like a bat ears. Fangs, I remember distinctively. Very large fangs that came out over the mouth down towards, ended at the chin area. and it growled. And there was no fur. It was slick skin. And it growled. And when it growled in front of me, I felt the ground vibrate. And I couldn't move. It had me, it had control over me. I felt some of that may have been fear. But at that time, my dog lunged for this thing. And because I had put him on a leash that night, I was able to jerk him back up into my chest and hold him to me. But I couldn't move. And this thing communicated to me. Basically, it made me feel this emotion. And the message was that I was to stop going forward looking for the truth about my aunt. And that if I didn't, that I would know grief unlike anything else. And that's the moment I felt as if my children had died right in front of me. I can't explain any more feeling of grief other than I'm going to cry just thinking about how that made me feel so. I had never felt so much grief like that. And it let me know that that's what I was going to be feeling if I didn't stop pursuing these Freemasons. And I was still frozen. And then when it finished letting me know that I was to no longer investigate that, it released me. And I was able to take a few steps backwards, still looking at this thing, trying to comprehend, what am I seeing in front of, what is this thing? And I turned around to see where I could run, where I could go. And all I saw was a white pickup truck that was right there. And all I could do was just jump in the back of the pickup truck. And as I turned back around, that thing had become two. Both of them turned towards each other, and in sync, both went right back down into the drain, down into the... Now, these things were big. They were huge. It was impossible for them to actually fit into that drain. I didn't know that at the time, but I later, you know, when I went looking. So I jumped into the back of the truck. I'm shaking. I'm trying to dial the phone. I'm trying to make a phone call to my daughter's father, who's at the apartment, so he can come down there, run down there. I thought for sure I was dead. Like, I didn't know where, when they were coming back up. I didn't, all I did, get down here, bring the baseball bat. And I don't even remember if I was thinking anything. I just remember shaking so bad, like I was freezing. That's how bad I was shaking. And he comes running, and I can hear him, and I start pointing over in the direction of the drain. I'm like, there's something down there. There's something in, oh my God, there's something in there. He's looking at me like I'm crazy. What? Get out of there. What are you in the back of this truck? I don't even know whose truck this is. Get out of somebody's truck. Are you crazy? And he's trying to get me out, but I can't stand up. And so he pulls me up over this truck, and I'm standing there. I'm like, there's something down there. And I wanted to run inside the house. He's like, over here? I'm like, yes, over there. And he walks over to the area, and he taps the top of it with the baseball bat, and we both heard this growl, the same growl, and the ground vibrated again, and I started running back to the house. And he looked at me like, what in the hell is that? And I'm like, did you hear that? Oh my God. I was so happy that he heard it, just so I wasn't alone in that. But, you know, he knew there was something that definitely we didn't need to be messing with. That growl was just so strong and so, oh my gosh. I ran up to the house. I was a basket case. I was just talking a thousand miles. I mean, I just telling everybody and anybody, and I wanted to go to every person in that area to tell them to not let their kids outside on the bikes. I mean, everybody thought I had lost my mind. I know what I saw, and what I saw could easily have eaten me and just taken me right down into that water drain. I could not believe. I think I was in shock. And then people started making, like my nanny started making fun of me, saying, oh, you saw a chupacabra. I've never even heard of what that was. I'd never heard of anything like that before. I remember my daughter's father is saying, you know, what was that? What was going on? What was that? And I said, I don't know, but I'm done with my aunt's death. That's it. And I blocked all the phone numbers. I deleted the accounts that I had. I stopped all communication about her death completely. Everybody, it was just ended. I got that message loud and clear. And so then it was a couple days later, there was a wall underneath our apartment, and it was a geyser just shooting straight up the water, and they couldn't stop it. And it just started to flood the whole place where I was living. The smell, I remember the sulfur smell was so strong within the week after that. And then without 2 weeks later, I was awakened in the middle of the night by this really loud crash. It sounded like a car had crashed into the front of our house. And I ran outside to see what was going on. And I saw on the wall, right when I opened the door, I could see this. I can only explain it as it looked like placenta with feathers in it and blood that was just dripping down the wall. And I had felt some touching on my back when I was walking through the living room. Things like that were happening. And so I started getting more and more just terrified. And so I had my cousin come out and stay with me. And then my son, my cousin were sitting out on my balcony. This is about 3 weeks after seeing that, what I call the demon dog. And we're sitting out on my balcony, and I look over to the hills in Anaheim Hills, and I look over in the distance, and I see something catches my eye. And I say to my cousin, look over there. Do you see? And my son looks. I go, look over there. Go get the binoculars. Go get the binoculars. And so he runs in and gets the binoculars. He comes back. My cousin takes them first. She goes, Angie, that's a motherfucking Bigfoot. And that's what she said. And I'm like, right? She's like, yes. And then my son looks at it through the binoculars. He goes, oh my God, what is that? And then I look at it, and we all three sit on my balcony and watch this huge brown colored, taking huge stride steps and arms down past his knees, just walking like nothing, and just very clear. And we're watching it. And my first instinct was, the people in those houses should know that there's a Bigfoot in the back of, you know, down this hill coming up towards their house. But we were just like in a trance. All we could do was just watch this thing walk until it disappeared. And we watched it for a good, probably 7 to 8 minutes going up the side of this hill. And I the next thing that happened was the poison oak and poison ivy started growing all around, and I moved. I completely moved out as soon as I could. Well, I wanted to move as soon as I saw the demon dog, but by the time the poison oak and poison ivy started growing all around, we were gone. And this is the first time I've talked about my aunt's death actually since then.
You think it's maybe connected?
I do. I got the message loud and clear. I actually tried. I went to every bookstore. I went and bought the biggest Bible I could find after that, because I did felt there was so much evil attached to it. And I felt that family, I call it that family. It's not my family anymore, but those people do a lot of evil things, and they have a lot of evil stuff still to do. And I think that I was jeopardizing that. And I, for the money, for the $3 million, or for whatever reason, but they didn't care about finding out how she died. I mean, maybe they do know how she died. Maybe already maybe they were part of it. It was planned. I don't know, but they don't miss me. I don't miss them. They don't try to contact me, and neither I'm done with them. But I think that they have a lot of stuff going on that I could never be a part of. And I think that thing was letting me know in a way that I would leave them leave them be to do whatever it is they're doing. And in a way, I felt like, okay, I can do that because this, whatever that was that jumped out at me, was not of this world, not of anything that I'm familiar with. And I do feel that because seeing that, I now have a better understanding that I do believe in God more. I do believe in the opposite, because I just felt so much evil attached to that thing, that there was so much evil, that there must be the opposite of that. That's how I looked at it. My life changed completely after that, after seeing that. I used to be very materialistic. I was a completely different person. And now I'm like, I buy my shoes at Payless. I don't even care anymore. Like, this is, it brought things into perspective for me, as far as there's so much more out there that we don't even possibly could even understand. I could never, I wouldn't even begin to figure out what that was. It was a message that I got loud and clear. I know it was physical. I mean, I saw it, but how it got down in the drain, I don't know. I mean, I called animal control to come and look at the, you know, they told me, oh, it's a raccoon. It was no raccoon. Oh, please. You know, you try to explain to people, they think you're crazy. I don't know. I know my son, I tell my son, I'm like, did we not see a Bigfoot? And he'll say, Mom, why do you got to say it? Why do you got to tell people? I'm like, did we or did we not watch Bigfoot walk it? He goes, yes, Mother, we did. Yes. Just, why do you got to keep telling people that? I go, because people need to know that it's real. It's real. They need to know. Like, the people, all these people keep seeing it. And I hear there's more sightings of that. And I do feel that it was connected to whatever that was, because I had never experienced so much supernatural stuff within a matter of weeks in my life. Like, I don't know if it was the area or if it was a combination of what was going on with my family and in the area. I don't know. I just know that once I moved, it stopped. Everything stopped. And I became a better person, actually. A lot more compassion, a lot more patience. A lot more just loving my kids more because of that feeling that I had lost them, that it gave me. That's the most, I think the most thing that bothered me the most was that it was able to bring emotion on me like that. It, like, it hijacked me. You know what I'm saying? Like, it caused me to really feel like my children had just been killed right there in front of me. And that is the most severe amount of anguish that any person could experience. And that's what it did. It made me feel that. That's pretty powerful. You know, it is very powerful. And I don't want to mess with that thing. Whatever that was, I have no desire to find out anything more about that.
You know, I can speak from experience. This stuff is very, very real. Very real. There's a side to this. You can call it psychic warfare, whatever. But I mean, I'm not very religious, but I know for a fact there is that side of it. So if there's that side of it, then there's the good side.
Yeah, right.
So moving forward, so obviously, you know, you got the message loud and clear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you don't want to carry on. You don't want to find out. You don't want to dig up any.
No. Like I said, it completely changed me. I'm just so lucky. I'm just easygoing now. Like, nothing is just, I'm here for the amount of time that I'm here for. And I'm sure there's something else. When I pass on, there's something else I will go to. And I'm just easy breezy. No problems anymore. Like, you know, I just really, I have respect for whatever that was to not want to find out any, like, you know what I mean? Like, the power it has, that's something that is not of anything that there's no way I could, the way it just stopped me straight. I mean, it had total control over me. There was no move. And you know, the fact that my dog had bit me just two nights before that, to the fact that I put that leash on him I felt like that in a way, because I'd had that dog forever. It was my little baby. And I felt like if he wouldn't have bit me, he would have been free walking around. I don't know what happened to him, because he wasn't paralyzed. He was lunging for this thing, you know, and I don't know what would have happened to my dog. But because he did bite me, he was on the leash and I was able to grab him and pull him up into my chest. Now he's passed on, but now I have four pit bulls that sleep at the foot of my bed every night. I don't go out at night late by myself ever at night. So my life has changed seeing this. And I'm not looking for it everywhere, but I know, you know, I know it's somewhere. It could happen. I don't want to be out at night. You know what I mean? I don't know what my pit bulls could do, but I just feel like at least I have some protection. I don't know.
They're protecting you. That's what they're doing.
My family doesn't talk to me anymore at all. My grandfather has no, there were things that I had put on the internet, on YouTube. I had tried to talk about what was going on. He disowned me. And that is something I never thought would ever happen. And that was hard, very hard, because we were family. That was my papa, you know, and I was his favorite granddaughter. I mean, and then to have that, I didn't know him. He just completely turned, and it was all about, I mean, it was about her husband. He was more important than me. And they were all the coroner. I even had to get my attorney to write a letter to the sheriff's department demanding that they release that 911 recording of her, of my uncle or her husband, you know, making that call. Many things my mother and I had problems with about that recording. First of all, every time they asked if she was breathing, he said, oh, yeah, she just took another breath. I mean, she was already dead. When the EMT unit got to her house, she was already dead. So that 911 call was just an act. You know, he had kept saying she was taking breaths. She was twitching or this or that, but she had been dead. At the funeral, it was very clear to anyone who saw her, the bruises that were on her and around her neck. And no one questioned it. Like, everyone just followed what my grandpa said. She died of a heart attack. Well, what caused the heart attack? That was my question. Maybe she did, but why? I almost forgot this part. After trying to find my family and its family of origin, my mother had told me that my great-grandfather was a Nazi, a German Nazi, and that he died while living his life in Kentucky at his house by the lake. And I said, that's impossible. How can our great-grandfather be a Nazi and be in America living his life, the few remaining days he had left, by the lake in Kentucky? That doesn't make sense. She goes, oh, yeah. Well, he was very, very mean. And he was a soldier. He was a SS soldier. He was a high-ranking official in the German war. And he was a Nazi. He's like, and we're not proud of that. But he did come and he moved here and was given some land by the government. And I guess my great-grandma and my great-grandpa were given land by... I mean, how is that possible? So then I started thinking about Operation Paperclip, I think is what it was called. And I told my mom, I said, Mom, do you understand that it would not have been allowed? Like, you can't be, like, the first of all, I never even knew that my great-grandpa was a Nazi. I mean, that he, and the way she just talked about it was like it was just common knowledge. And then I started finding all these pictures. And sure enough, you know, there he is in his Nazi uniform as a younger, you know, man with my great grandma. And I'm thinking, well, why were they in America? And why did they had a lot of land given to them when he came here. And isn't that Operation Paperclip, what they brought, like, high-ranking officials from that were Nazis into the United States? Did you remember hearing or reading anything about that?
Yeah, that's correct. Operation Paperclip was correct, yeah.
So how is it that he... I asked my mom, how could he be here? She's like, well, I don't know. I just know that's where he ended up. I'm like, okay, that isn't... And do you understand what I mean? Like, that just blew my mind that he... And I do know that they did have a lot of land, but I wasn't aware of that uniform until I started really, like, looking into my family background and why my grandpa was the way he was and why they were all Freemasons. And but I'm out. You know, they even tried to get my son to go behind my back. The Demoles, the pre-Mason, whenever they send the boys that are like 12 or 13, is that, I think that's how you pronounce it, Demole? It's like the pre-Mason thing where they get sent away and they learn how to be Masons so they can be Masons when they're adults. And I was like, no way. No, he's not going to be a part of that ever.
How do you feel about being estranged from your family now?
I'm perfectly fine with that. I feel much safer. I feel my children are safer. And I feel sad sometimes because I feel like it was all a big lie. Like, how you, everything that I thought was real growing up just died when my aunt died. I mean, I just feel like the more I keep finding out, the worse it gets. So, I mean, there's so many secrets and so many lies. And I wish, you know how they say ignorance is bliss. And no doubt about it. I mean, I was happy with not knowing. But I think it's safer to know, and I think it's safer to have that choice. They couldn't understand why I wouldn't. My cousins that are just like me, like best friends growing up, they're complete opposite. They are following what my grandpa says. They love that. It's like a ritual for them. You know, they go to their Eastern Star meetings with all the other women, and they do their, where they do their robe ceremonies. And to me, I feel sick, nauseous, physically nauseous being around any of that. I can't do it. I don't know why. I don't know how they can and I can't, but physically the idea of it, that's not my family. Like, that's not people. They're just, I don't want to know them. And so I got my kids, that's my family, and I raised them to be free thinkers. And at least to know there is some evil stuff in this world, and it is not our job to mess with it. That's how I feel about it.
Sure. I mean, whatever the Freemasons portray themselves as being, you know, there is still a dark underbelly to them. I'm sure I'm going to get an email from at least one Mason.
I'm sorry. I mean, you know, I know they do a lot of good things on the surface. I mean, that's what it looks like on the surface. But that thing that jumped out at me, it was simply because I was digging too deep into an investigation that there was $3 million on the line. Basically, that was the life insurance that my aunt left her husband. And it went all into the Mason pot. And that's what I was messing with, I think, is what it mostly was about. But my grandfather basically sacrificed his daughter. And that wasn't, you know, she was only 16 years old whenever they let her get married to this man who was a 30-year-old man at that time. She was just a child, you know. And I come to find out there was transactions done. There was trade done on that, you know. There was a whole reconstruction done to the church, and in return, this man got to marry my aunt, who was only 16 years old at the time, and he turned out to be a very, very evil man. Several charges of child molestation have come up against him, and my grandfather and my uncles just help him get off he's never served one day in jail. And there are numerous allegations against him. And yet these other men just protect him as if, you know, like, I've never seen anything like it. I never would have believed my grandpa could be so accepting of something like that, of that man. But he is. He chose him over me, so.
It's only a small town. What was the name of the town?
It's a very small town. Liberty, Indiana. It's a very small town. Mm-hmm.
What job did your grandfather do?
He worked in a factory until he retired, and then I just know he started buying up houses all in town, all along Main Street. They call him the Donald Trump of Libertucky, is what they call him. You know, he has a lot of land in Kentucky. He just real estate, land and properties. That's what he's been doing this whole time. And he's acquired quite a bit since then. And he's the one that like will help out his strangers. You know, those kind of people who help strangers but don't want to help their own family, or are really, really nice to people they barely know, but yet treat their own family like crap. That's the narcissist at its finest. I think that's the other problem, is I don't kiss his butt like my cousins do, because I don't need to. But yeah, they love just that little group of keeping things. I don't know. I just felt like, would I be next, you know, if I was in that town still? Like, there's no, I told my cousin, I'm like, you could be next.
And you live some distance away now, don't you?
Well, I'm back in Kentucky, which is about 3 hours from my grandfather, but I do not have any, I tell my mother not to tell them where I'm at, and not to give them any information about how my kids are or what they're doing. And my children have blocked them on Facebook and all their social media. And see, they're very racist as well. My whole family is very racist. And my son is part Mexican and my daughter is part Indian, Punjabi and Sikh Indian. And so they don't really care to know my children that much anyway, because they look at me as if I damaged the white bloodline, basically. You know, they used to call my son a little jalapeno. So I don't really, they're not trying to see my kids very much. That's another reason. They're very, very racist, and I'm just the opposite of them. I don't know how I turned out to be so different, but I feel everything is fine now, and my son and his father and my life is fine. That, on the other side, those people that I used to call my family, I no longer, that's not my family. And the things that they are into and the way they act, I don't want any part of that. That's not me. It's not, it's evil stuff. And I don't know what they're getting out of it, but it's definitely, it can't be much peace for, you know, I don't want to live like that. I'm happy the way I am right now. I'm good.
Well, the way I look at it is what goes around comes around.
Yeah, I've heard that. But it does seem like evil lives a long, long time. Do you ever notice that? It's like it never dies. Like somebody who's evil and does evil things in life can live to be 100. You know, while a good person, like my aunt was such a wonderful person. She was 45 when she died. I mean, that was so young, and I'll never know until I guess I maybe see her one day. I don't know. I get to find out.
You know, I think it's important to remember and also surround yourself with good and love and everything.
Yeah.
Because it's very easy to get involved, to get mixed up and get dragged into the dark side of things.
Right? It's very tempting. Mm-hmm.
I really appreciate you coming on today. It's been absolutely fascinating, and I admire your courage for coming in and speaking on of such things.
So thank you so much for having me come on and talk about things. I just want people to know there's things out there. You don't, everybody says, oh, she's crazy. No, they're not crazy. They have seen some things, and one day it might be your turn, and you don't want anyone calling you crazy. There will be people there to support you, just like I've had so many people being very supportive of what I went through. it's real. Never experienced it doesn't mean it's not real and it doesn't exist. There's things of this world that you just cannot explain. And I hope I never, ever have that experience in my life ever again. Once is enough. Thank you for having me.
That is all for today. If you'd like to contact me about sharing your encounter, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com or via the contact page on my website, ufochroniclespodcast.com. Thank you to our guest and thank you for listening. I will be back next week. Till then, stay safe and keep watching the skies. Goodbye.